I'm Daniel Lenzian from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Perhaps you have seen the exhibit Leroy Living in Color at the Birchfield Penny and have felt inspired, enlivened, or invigorated. I know I did. If you haven't been, the Birchfield Penny Arts Center is a museum dedicated to the art and vision of Charles E. Birchfield and the art and artists of our region. Through their affiliation with SUNY Buffalo State College, they encourage learning and celebrate our richly creative, diverse community. The Birchfield Penny engages young people with the help of teaching artists. According to the Berklee School of Music, teaching artists are practicing professional artists who have dual careers as educators. They come from every artistic field: music, dance, theater, visual arts, writing, and work in many settings, including schools and museums. In collaboration with Leroy Johnson, a group of teaching artists, including Caitlin Lowe from Squeaky Wheel Film and Media Arts Center, Robin Jordan from Just Buffalo Literary Center, Kevin Klein from Buffalo Center for Arts and Technology, and Jay Hawkins, aka Cassius Green, a teaching artist for Buffalo Schools, worked with a group of young people to extend the reach of the Living in Color exhibit and create a very special project with the Birchfield Penny. Could you tell us a little bit about your early life? Did you grow up in an artistic family?
Yes, I grew up in a very artistic family. My mother was an entertainer, dancer. We had a lot of music around, and we did a lot of things related to entertainment, such as, we hung around with people like George Laurent, was at the Zanzibar and was doing the hounds around. And we attended a lot of events like the African Culture Center and the Cold Spring Drum Corps and a lot of things related to entertainment and art.
When did you realize that painting was going to be a part of your life?
It was very, very late that I realized that painting would be a part of it, but I had always indulged in painting and in sketching and going to museums. That was just part of my life that I never really thought about. But as things started to grow, it meant a lot that I had done those things because I really had no set plan or agenda to be an artist. I just did a lot of things that were related to art, not even thinking about it. Eventually, one day, someone saw my work and asked me, did I want a show? And that was John Simon at a hair salon named Simon Salon. So that was the first show. And I still wasn't thinking seriously. And to be honest with you, I've never really thought seriously about being. I'm a doer. I don't think about what I'm doing. I just do.
Good advice for young artists.
Yeah, because it's very tough out there. But my advice to them is to continue working on their creativity and try to be as individualistic and as stay true to themselves in terms of what they feel and what they're doing.
I think it's incredible to speak to someone who has kind of the artistic kind of output and breadth of work that you do, who is also a practicing lawyer. What prompted the decision to become a lawyer?
Well, that was basically a kind of a family decision. It was kind of a twofold decision. I had reached a point during the Vietnam era where, you know, there had to be a decision made in terms of getting an advanced degree. I'd already finished up college. And they were drafting people who weren't going on for advanced degrees. I had a very quick decision to make because I was really doing a lot of traveling a lot. I had not received my draft notice because I was away from Buffalo for a number of months and calling home. There was a letter. My mother said, there's a letter here for selective service that you're in school in 2 weeks or you're in the Army. So that wasn't much of a choice.
In your bio, it seems like there was a connection to DC, I think, which is where you went to law school, and your artwork in the 1970s. What was happening at that time that inspired your work as an artist and as a painter?
As I said, I was involved in a lot of things that were art related, and I was painting, but I had never put it all together. I was one of the co-founders of the Museum of the City of Washington, and as a result, I spent a lot of time at the Corcoran, and the National Gallery of Fine Art was right across the street from my office, so every lunchtime I would go in there. It was kind of like the experience that you might have if you were in college studying art. Because, you know, a lot of students would be there and they would be studying things and I would be there, but I wasn't there to study. I was there to look and to have lunch. But I was getting the same experience that they were in terms of analyzing works and just spending a lot of time looking at works by masters.
You toured the world as a musician manager or a musical artist manager, and you visited many artistic venues, and I would sort of count Studio 54 to be one of those venues. And the energy that surrounded the music scene must have been incredible. Do you find that that energy or that aliveness permeates you or your work?
Yes, it does. You know, in those days, Studio 54 brought out the most creative of the creative people of that era. And I'm not just talking about the people in New York, but Studio 54 and the Limelight and the Jaguar and the Cheetah and all those clubs, they brought out people who were not only creative in their work, but they were creative in the way they dressed and the way they thought. So, I mean, that had an impact on me, because one of the things is that you noticed is that they had this intellectual freedom. That's part of being a successful artist, that you reach a level where you're free within yourself in terms of whatever style you have, and you understand that this is your style and this is you. And during those days, I met a lot of artists. Didn't think much of it. I went to one of Picasso's shows and he was there, and I didn't think much of that. I hung out with Basquiat and Warhol and Peter Max and didn't think a whole lot of that, other than, you know that they were famous and they did their thing. I really never thought about me being an artist like them. I never thought of that.
Is there anything sort of specific from such incredible artists like Basquiat or Warhol or even Peter Max that you sort of picked up, or anything that you sort of learned or gathered from being around them or hanging out with them?
I think their energy and their freedom, as I said, you know, the whole thing about great artists or good artists and that is that they're free within themselves and they do what they're about. And it took me a while to understand with Basquiat's work, because it was so different from everything else. I called it the best of trash art. And actually, it's the best of cobra art. And there's a lot to be learned from Basquiat, Picasso, and some of the others who were painting, because each one of them opened up the door to a form of art that wasn't accepted at that particular time. Basquiat comes more out of the cobra art period and graffiti, kind of a mixed bag of graffiti and cobra art, whereas Picasso went into forms that just weren't used. Before Picasso, most artists, there's a few that were different, but for the most part, he popularized modern, abstract, figurative art. It's different, quite different from the classical periods that had been before him.
I was lucky enough to see the exhibit at the Birchfield Penny, and I was bowled over by the use of color. In fact, everyone that I interviewed or spoke to at the event sort of specifically commented on the usage of color. Why do you feel that color is so important to your work?
You know, that's a funny question, because people always ask me about color. And I'm like, this is something that's just naturally innate within me that I use. I don't specifically address the issue of color in itself. I just paint what I see and feel when I paint. I'm surprised that people see the color and always mention color, because I don't see it myself. And maybe that's why people see the color that I don't see.
I think that there's a vibrancy to your work. There's a palpable feeling when you walk into the exhibit now of just an aliveness and a vibrancy. And I think that maybe that's what people are referring to about sort of color, right? That everything feels so alive and so vital, and the vibration of the work is really high.
Well, that's great to hear. when I paint, I am painting things from both from the soul and from imagination, and the colors and everything and the forms and that. It all comes out in this imaginary thing that I see and translate to sketches. And then once I translate it to sketch, once I start laying down the colors just naturally flow. I have a different feel for certain colors. I remember these artists came in from China, University of Beijing, and they were looking for colors, a particular kind of red. And the first time someone mentioned to me about color was the person at Hyatt's. And the person at Hyatt said that this guy's a master of color. You should ask him. And so I'm looking at him. What is he talking about? So they asked me about these reds and what red. I said, well, I don't think any of those reds are the reds that if you want to do what you want to do. So I pointed them out to a different color red, which is a kind of a lighter tone of red after you apply your darker tones. And they loved it. They said, I would have never thought of that. I was, maybe that's why he asked me to point out to you the red tones. And they were actually teaching a course. They came in from China to teach a course on color at Buff State. So they asked me to come to the class. And I went to the class and I talked about color concept, that, my color concept about how to reach a certain color. There's a technique to that, I've developed, but I think that it was developed years ago by other people. I don't think I'm the first person who did it. I just use a certain technique to get colors.
Do you still teach, or do you teach, or is it just occasional master classes, or do you teach residencies?
No, just occasional. I taught during the summer for the students for the project that they're involved in with me. And I also teach art over at the Reach Academy over on Jefferson Avenue. But for the most part, no.
Well, with the project that the students are working on with you currently through, I guess, the Birchfield Penny, can you describe that project to us?
The original concept was for us to work with a few students, and it turned into four different groups: the Buffalo Center for the Arts and Technology, the Squeaky Wheel, the Just Buffalo Literary, and the Buffalo Public Schools. The whole idea was for me to talk to them and inspire them to do something creative around my work, but my idea was for them to just be incentivized to do their own work based on the knowledge and inspiration that I give them. And there was a mixture sure both that really happened. But in terms of when they started actually doing the project themselves, it was something that they did with little instruction from me, other than we spent 5 or 6 weeks talking about concept, its design and fabrication, and then they were let go to do what they did.
I want to say that in seeing the exhibit, I was really moved and inspired, and I've really kind of come back to in my own thinking. And I'm so sorry, I don't necessarily know the name of the piece, but I believe it's on wood, and I know that it belongs to Canisius College, and it's the piece that I would describe, and if I'm using the wrong language here, please forgive me, it looks like sort of a choir, and there's a sort of a conductor figure or someone sort of conducting it on the bottom, and something about that piece just really connected with me and spoke to me on a very, very deep level, and I think it continues to work on me.
That's called unification. And it's actually how people perceive of other people. And the conductor is the person who's really conducting the outside view of what people are looking at. And people are influenced by that. So the conductor could be television newscaster, or could be anybody like that, who the mayor or the president, who's getting people to think a certain way about certain people. So depending on how you look at that painting, at the bottom they have criminals and athletes, and because that's all you hear about on the news, you hear about that. So that's deep in the forefront of your visuals. If you're looking from down up, you're seeing the different levels of people as they look at, you know, they might see a priest and that on another level, but sometimes they see priests on the same level with criminals. And then you go up, you see the workmen and the family people, and you continue to go up. And then you see at the end, the common man, which sometimes could be referred to as the disciples, because most of them, all of them have these halos on, which reflect upon their being blessed and being saintly. But it just all just depends on your view of things. I don't like to tell people what my view is, because I know what my view is, because I'm not going to be able to tell everybody what my view is. I'm more interested in what their view is, because that's the thing that's going to resonate and stay with them.
That kind of brings me to my next thought, was that on the website for the exhibit, it sort of uses the phrase transforming people from passive viewers to active participants. And I don't necessarily know if that was something that you wrote or something that you expressed, but I felt really that all of the work that I saw at the exhibit was really transforming people from passive viewers to active participants. What do you feel about that?
Most of my work was under original theory I used to use, or phrase I used to call it, was curiosity. You know, I had most of the pieces are looking at you. As you look at them, they're looking back at you. They're telling a story. You're looking at them and trying to figure out a story for them. And they're also looking at you. They kind of play with the eyes and that a little bit like that. So there's stories within stories in almost every one of my pieces. It's not always what you think. Most of those pieces are far from what you think. And it has a lot of double meanings to it. And a lot of it talks about historical anecdotes and that kind of thing. And some of it just is very personal with things that have happened to me in life.
I couldn't help sort of thinking about that quote about sort of passive viewers becoming active participants, also connecting to, you know, other aspects of your life, like being surrounded by music, which sort of, and the music that you were surrounded by and created throughout your work as a manager, but also your work at sort of, we were talking about in the sort of Studio 54, was about kind of getting people up and moving and becoming active participants.
Music is something that it kind of does it. I think art does it. Art gets you involved in thinking about social matters and community matters and art in general. I mean, art in general can mean a lot. You know, it can just mean soothing, something that's very soothing, like pastures and sunsets and that sort of thing. But at the same time, I think when you use some contradiction, say, for instance, if you use slave person and put them in some very bright colors, then your whole thinking about that person has changed. You're not thinking that this person is a slave. You're thinking about how joyful this is, this experience of this person, not of the experience that they're having. So I kind of play with a lot of that kind of thing. A lot of it is very playful, but at the same time, and historic, like for instance, the women in rollers, you know, that's kind of playful because all the women can relate to that. It went from just wearing rollers at home to wearing them to nightclubs and that kind of thing. And they got all dressed up with their rollers on, and then they stopped taking the rollers out and just kept them on and just went out with them. So a lot of it just plays with a lot of things that go on out here that I think about.
I'm wondering, sort of kind of dealing with people's different stories too, I'm sure that, and I'm by no means looking for specifics, but being a lawyer and having to kind of consider story from many different angles may sort of impact your work as an artist. Do you find that the two practices can inspire each other?
Yes, they do. I think that you're looking for some kind of truth in your work. In both of them, you're looking for some kind of truth. And then at the same time, okay, what is the is there? What is really happening? So I kind of take the thing that the is, and then I kind of toy with that. And I think by having that experience in art, you kind of want to do the same things in law. So you want to be creative in there, and yet you know that at the same time that you're restricted with law. You're more restricted with law, but sometimes I never start out with what the law is. I kind of start out with how I wanted to arrive at an endpoint with this, and then I'll apply the law afterward. And it's kind of like with art, it's the same thing. I don't have any training, so I don't know where I'm going with that, and really don't really think about how I should be doing this, because that's training and that's the last thing that I really want. Sometimes I need it. I need a little bit. I'm trying to do something in a particular style, but I usually just figure it out.
What continues to inspire your work today?
Everything. There's no one thing that inspires my work. Everything inspires people, places. Like right now I'm in Brazil. I get a lot of inspiration from being here with Carnival and just seeing all the people. This is the time when most of the people here, they get free. They are who they want to be. They'll dress up in certain things. You know, the guys will have dresses on and makeup and dress like women. And then the women will have all kinds of different costumes on. And I mean, they're just free to be whoever they want to be. And that's what, you know, I like to be on the canvas. I like to be kind of free as I can be. You know, anywhere I go, there's nothing that restricts the freedom that I might have in terms of being inspired.
You reside in Buffalo. How does the city inspire your work?
The city is a great city for inspiration. First of all, you have the time in Buffalo to be inspired. In a lot of major cities, you don't have the time. You're spending hours in transportation, that sort of thing. But Buffalo has such a relaxed atmosphere, and the people are, in many respects, are relaxed. And there's so many great things around you that give you energy, like Niagara Falls and the lake, having a great lake right there. That's all inspiring. And the change of seasons also is inspiring. So there's a lot here that inspires me quite a bit. I mean, it's the best place for me to be in.
I would say you're a visionary artist. As a visionary artist, what would your vision be for the future of Buffalo?
Some people want to keep Buffalo as it is, but I see so much potential here, particularly with the waterfront. And regardless of what people think here, there's a few people who control the direction of the city, and it shouldn't be like that. I think the people should control it. I think the direction I would like it to be is to get a real waterfront and to redevelop the neighborhoods, to get the neighborhoods to be neighborhoods and not just vacant lots. We're moving in a great direction with murals, and the artistic community and culture community is as good as anywhere that I've been in. So I'm not much concerned with that. I'm more concerned with the general attitude of the people who are really holding that Buffalo back from being what it really can be. So things are happening that they have no control over that are going to change the city in a positive direction. And that would probably be the number of immigrants who come into Buffalo. They're going to make the city more international. But then the pandemic has changed the whole game. But I think we have to change the game back by getting more creative people involved in those processes. Where right now, it's the same people making the same decisions with the same results.
Those are my questions. I want to thank you so much for your time. Before we go, I always like to sort of ask the subject that I'm interviewing. Is there anything that you would like to say or you feel is left unsaid in our small chat today?
I think that the culturals are going to save Buffalo, and we now have a true international flagship institution, which is the Albright. And I think culturally, the culturals have saved the city for 20 years. And now this city is going to take a major step culturally, but we need assets to go along with that. And the city will build up just on the basis of that alone.
Thank you very, very much for your time. It was a real pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you.
Next, we have Caitlin Lowe from Squeaky Wheel Film and Media Arts Center. What is your artistic practice?
My artistic practice, I do a little bit too much. My first love has been poetry. I've been doing poetry for over like 12, 13 years. I do photography. I'm an editor. Really all of those kinds of things. I used to do visual art and jewelry making and things like that. Not as much as I used to, but hopefully I'll get back into that.
That's fantastic. What's your connection to the Birchfield Penny and the Leroy exhibit?
So I was one of the teaching artists for Squeaky Wheel Film and Media Arts Center. And Tiffany and I were close friends. So we were part of an organization together in college. And she talked to me in the beginning stages of the installation and asked, was this something that we would be interested in to try to have our students collaborate and respond to his work? And so I worked with a few people, Martina Lovallo, who was the education and the marketing director at Squeaky, as well as Mark Longaluccio. I don't know, I probably butchered his last name, but he is the tech director at Squeaky, but we worked to kind of like co-teach the class. And we also created a student council, which was kind of just like giving the students a lot more stake in their education through the art and having them make decisions as well. So helping to coordinate the students and like the logistical behind the scenes, as well as being in class and helping the students understand what does it mean to respond to work? How can I take my true authentic point of view and use that in response to what another person has created?
What was the age of the students you were working with?
So our students ranged from 14 to 23. There was one 23-year-old, but everybody else was in high school.
What inspired you when you first saw the exhibit?
Honestly, the thing that really inspired me is kind of when I saw Leroy's work, the first thing that I was reminded of was Basquiat, and I'm from New York. So I love a little grunge. I love a little like rough around the edges, just pure authentic expression. And so that's something that I was kind of like I looked at, I started to have more questions trying to figure out, what does this symbol mean? What does that mean? There are certain images that I can respond to as a Black person that I just like could think of innately, but as an artist, what does this mean? And so peeling back those layers, finding out more about Leroy as a person and the way that he creates was something that was super impactful to me. And to even go back and to look at how everyone kind of saw something different from his work and were able to add on to different layers that, you know, somebody else might not have thought about. That's all of those things were super inspirational for me.
How did you bring this initial inspiration and some of the research that you did kind of after seeing the exhibit to the classroom?
I mean, it's hard. Students are complicated, especially high schoolers. I know that there is a negative stigma with they don't like to work. They don't want to listen to anybody. They don't want to do anything. That's the furthest from the case. I think that in academia, we kind of force a certain structure. This is the way to interact with something. The first thing that we needed to do was to break them out of that, because people are thinking response, what do you mean? What does that mean? Do you want me to write an essay or something like that? And no, that's not what we're talking about. So first we had to deconstruct the idea of an artistic response and then start to bring in Leroy's work. Another question that we had was, how is this going to live in this space? We're a film and media art center. Pretty sure not everybody's going to want to make a short film or something of that nature. So how can we make sure that we're touching everybody's artistic spirit, right? And so in a sense, everyone did create short films. The first idea was kind of like to do something that was sculptural. Then we realized that we don't have the capabilities for for like super building structures. Like, we're not the foundry. It's just not going to work out. And we even tried to connect with the foundry, and just certain things weren't crossing over as well as they should have. And so what we ended up doing was projection mapping. And that's something that the students ended up voting on. We had conversations about what Squeaky has done in the past, so what this could look like for other students. And the best part about that and dealing with the council is that some of the students were physically there for classes that were taught with projection mapping, so they already had a leg up. And since they're already seen as leaders, they're pulling their classmates up and trying to fill in the gaps where maybe I have questions, or maybe somebody else that they can just like immediately go in and figure things out with. So bottom line, we first had to figure out what we were going to do. And when we decided it was going to be projection mapping, we started to run through the process of seeing art, getting able to respond to it just like through conversation. And then how can I make certain connections from this piece from Leroy that inspires me? How can I use my personal experiences, make something that's truly reflective of myself, as well as a group, because it was a group installation. So a handful of different layers, but I think it all worked out in the end.
What do you hope the students were able to kind of take away from this experience?
I just want them to keep doing it. If they never decide to have work exhibited again, okay, that's their business. But the idea of thinking about art in a different way. Admittedly, something that was also a problem is that the students didn't fully understand his work as well. And so how can I take something that I don't fully understand and then try to like find the meaning behind it, beyond just like, this isn't as easy as I'd like for it to be. So I don't like it. I'm just going to like walk away from it. I want them to fully take away the idea of interacting with work, whether they like it or not, whether they understand it or not, just things that are different. They're able to like go through the process of seeing it through and seeing where it takes them, just going on the journey and not being afraid of it.
As you were speaking too, I thought it's so interesting that sometimes I think that we can think of understanding too, you know, I'm certainly guilty of it, as like an on-off switch, like I understand or I don't understand. Whereas I think in some ways, like what you're teaching me is really truly like we can look at something and have levels of understanding.
Yeah, of course, because I mean, we're all human beings. We process things differently. And there's certain things that from my culture, from my experience, are just going to click faster than from somebody else or vice versa. And so sometimes those questions that you have, the uncomfortable questions that you may feel embarrassed to ask, like, I don't get this, so I'm going to just smile and nod and move away. Like, no, why don't you understand this? Why do you have questions about this? What's standing out to you? Because those questions can lead to even more impactful work, or can even lead to more impactful understandings. So I think that, you know, just run into it. Just do it, because, I mean, why not?
How can seeing others' artistic work inspire us or help us connect with our own artistic practice?
Oh, that's a good question.
Thank you.
I think that seeing someone's work, especially a lot of it, because Leroy has a lot of work. Like at first we just like looked at stuff on his website, and Tiffany also curated like a little selection of pieces for the students to interact with. But just being able to dive into somebody's world, you're diving into their minds, so to speak. So you're really seeing life from their perspective. And I think that as humans, we're intersectional. We all come from different facets of life, and we can learn something from literally anyone. So being able to step into somebody's world, it has the possibility of like really making you ask yourself those questions, like, what does this mean? How does this connect? How do I feel about this? And it leads to like some bigger ideas. It might even lead to some conversations with maybe a friend or something where it's like, oh, hey, you know, I saw this thing. And now like you're in a whole philosophical life debate about the color red or something, right? I think that especially if you have the opportunity to talk to the artist and kind of get them to dissect themselves, it's the perfect textbook. And having someone who is well respected and has put in the work for some years to create a foundation for themselves, I think that it's really just like a perfect example of life being the biggest teacher. That human interaction, just nothing like it. If I were to be able to talk to Van Gogh, I promise you I'm going to have a much different perspective from his work as opposed to reading a book or watching like a video essay or something or a documentary on it.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. Those are my questions. I always love to just sort of end an interview by saying, is there anything that you feel that was left unsaid or anything that you'd like to share?
I feel like this collaboration has been a mildly confusing process, but I think that this is one of the few moments in my life. Sometimes I'm a bit of a pessimist, but I feel as though there are moments I was able to see the light at the tunnel. The students may not understand what's going on. I may barely understand what's going on, but I know it's going to be amazing. I know that in 10 years, they're going to look at this and be super proud of themselves. This whole process, I've been learning about myself as an artist, and I'm not even the one that's in the exhibition. I just think that this was an amazing opportunity, and I want to thank Tiffany for bringing this to my students. I want to thank Leroy for wanting to collaborate with so many students across the city. And some of my students were international or are immigrants. So being able to get them here and being like an exhibited artist before college is such an achievement that I hope that everyone can feel proud of themselves and can look back and just be appreciative of the time that we've all shared together.
Well, thank you very much. It was so excellent talking to you. I mean, it sounds like it was an extraordinary process and there were so many kind of levels of learning, and I'm even benefiting just from kind of hearing about the work that was done and sort of considering my own interactions with the piece and Leroy and the teaching artist. So thank you very much for your time. Now we have Robin Jordan, coordinator of the Just Buffalo Literary Center. So I'd like to start off by asking, what is your artistic practice?
I'm a poet and a collage-based visual artist that also plays with text in that. So I'm really interested in multimodal art making and events. So putting on events where you have different forms of art sort of colliding and collaborating with each other. And I also really believe in interactivity. I love, as an artist, especially when I'm performing, inviting the audience to participate and collaborate and create along with me is also something I'm interested in as an artist.
What is your connection to the Birchfield Penny and the Roy exhibit?
Well, I was super grateful that they got in touch with us. So Tiffany Gaines, who's a curator there, has been sort of working with Leroy to put this exhibit together, and in particular, you know, sort of activate young artists in the process. And so I also work closely with Kevin Klein over at Buffalo Center for Arts and Technology. And so when they heard about this sort of collaborative youth element of the event, Kevin and Tiffany reached out to me, since I work at the Writing Center with young poets, and they asked us if we wanted to be involved.
Would you consider yourself a teaching artist?
Yes, absolutely.
For those that have maybe never heard that term before, what would you describe that a teaching artist does?
I like to think of it as a way of helping other people see how they might be an artist. In particular, since I teach writing as an art, I'm very passionate that I think everybody is a writer, that we all have the desire to communicate. And so as a teacher, I feel like it's my job to help people, in particular at this moment, young people discover, who am I as a writer, right? What is my voice? How do I want to communicate? What form is that going to take? And trying to sort of just help them discover that, but then also showing them all of the different possibilities of what writing can be and do, and trying to kind of support them as they discover who they are as a writer and as an artist.
What inspired you when you first saw the exhibit?
The opening was absolutely phenomenal. So I've never quite been to an art opening like that, to see all of the different community coming together. So in particular, the way that Leroy and Tiffany sort of activated young artists in the community. So when you got there, just to see his work, which is so visually exciting and vibrant and important, and to see the way that they wove youth art within it without any real barriers or distinction. I mean, clearly each artist was acknowledged. There was no youth corner, right? Like it was all woven together. And so seeing his work was super exciting. And along with that, seeing the youth art beside it, and then seeing the young artists come together in that space and meet each other and talk to each other and see their art alongside his art was honestly one of the most beautiful experiences I've had in a while, and definitely one of the most memorable gallery openings I've ever been to.
Did you work with some of the students after sort of the exhibit, or can you detail sort of maybe how you did work with them?
Yeah, so it sort of started with, we run workshops every Tuesday, Thursday for young people in Buffalo, and it's free. And so any young person can come. And so one day we had Leroy Johnson and Tiffany Gaines come, and the idea was that Leroy would sort of talk about his ongoing journey as an artist and share some of his artwork. And then we had youth in the moment write in response. And so then they had some time to write, and then they got to share in the moment back with Leroy. And so he got to sort of hear what they wrote, and they had these amazing conversations about meaning. And, you know, some of the pieces that the students wrote really amplified meaning that Leroy had in mind for a piece. And at other times they created entirely new meaning to go along with the artwork. So that's sort of the process. And so then from there, we sort of had the youth work on their pieces, revise if they wanted. And then basically the gallery took those pieces and mounted them on the wall right next to the artwork that they were inspired by. And BCAT created this really beautiful multimedia digital publication that sort of features all the youth art. And his youth are filmmakers. And so they came to our space and actually created these like poem films. So they filmed our students performing some of their pieces as well. So it was also really awesome to see the young artists directly collaborate in that way too and combine their art forms.
What do you hope the students take from this work or from this collaboration or all of these collaborations?
I hope, and I know that they did. They wrote me these really beautiful testimonials, and a lot of what they talked about was just how the power of art to build and create community, to help us understand each other and to be understood, but also just to see the value of art in the community and that it deserves our attention and our resources. And also just that as young artists, like they don't need to wait to be taken seriously, right? We already take them seriously. And so I really want them to see how the community, how Birchfield Penny and Leroy and our organization, you know, provided them with resources and platforms to share their creations and ideas. And also just the way that they kind of, like they said, but the idea of community, again, like how not only are they meeting young artists from maybe different schools that they go to, different neighborhoods, but also young artists that are working in different art forms. So how they can, you know, build community within the arts in that way, and how they can use art to process the world and their place in it. A lot of them wrote about really important, serious topics. And I think you can really see how Leroy's work resonated with them or made them think about themselves and the world and what they think about it.
How can seeing or experiencing or reading or listening to other artistic work inspire us or help us connect with our own artistic practice?
Yeah, I think in so many ways. And I think some of the young artists talked about that too, just the power of seeing, even if it's not your own art form, right? And that's something that I'm really passionate about as an artist is thinking about how do these other art forms inform who I am as an artist, right? How can I look at film and integrate that with how I work with poetry? So I think sort of part of being an artist is absorption. And so I think as we experience other artwork, we sort of absorb and think about how can I take what I valued or what resonated with me within that particular piece or that art form and somehow use it to deepen my own practice or to expand my own thoughts of who I am as an artist and what I'm capable of.
Thank you very much for your time. It was really nice speaking with you, and I hope you have a great night.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks for doing this piece.
Now we have Kevin Klein, digital arts and curriculum designer for Buffalo Center for Arts and Technology. How would you describe your artistic practice?
It is a practice that revolves around, over the last couple of years, teaching. So a lot of what I have done, I have a background in photography and media arts, experimental media arts and digital technologies. And I have kind of crafted everything that I do around what the meaning of those technologies are, which is about kind of voice empowerment and access. So really my practice has evolved into being, how can I create curriculum for students to access in a way that is what I call not macaroni necklaces. In short, macaroni necklace is a cute project that kids do and adults like it. You give it to their parent or their caretaker or someone, and everybody hems and haws over it and doesn't believe in it. But, you know, it's not that the kids want to make macaroni necklaces. It's just that's the only thing that they're provided with as materials and as a base for creation. So I believe in giving them, especially when it comes to media and technology, a lot of literacy, a lot of access, a lot of flexibility. And I do that by centering on what they want to do and then adapt the technology towards that. So that's my practice. And I make stuff.
Yeah, that's great. I was a teaching artist at Bethel Woods, which is the Woodstock Concert Center. And we had a lot of conversation kind of around the avoidance of macaroni necklaces. So I know exactly what you're talking about in terms of how oftentimes, too, when there's kind of an educational outreach wing of something, the go-to is kind of a project like that, that is sort of self-contained and easy and has sort of a take-home thing. But the sort of educational component of you're taking home an actual physical object, but maybe not taking home sort of a new idea or thought around something.
At the end of the day, especially when it comes to the digital technologies, it's giving them access to their fundamental fabric of their interactions that they have in a given space, especially after COVID, where they really got pushed and leaned into, both willingly or not willingly, into kind of these non-real spaces, you know, digitally constructed ones. So the more that I can kind of demystify those particular parts of it is really important. And then on top of that, technology is a privilege and it's very relegated to a very small amount of people. And that access to control content and be your own producer and your own voice is really difficult. So a lot of it revolves around that.
What is your connection to the Birchfield Penny and the Leroy exhibit?
I used to be the director of education at Squeaky Wheel Film and Media Arts Center. And Tiffany Gaines, the associate curator, would often, well before she was in that position, would often come in with her and her partner and rent equipment. And we'd always chat. And she was always good people in the community and was curious about the youth and education classes that we ran in there. And she was just always a really good consort when it came to like discussing different ideas about access and what have you. So fast forward, you know, she reaches out. I know her and she knows I'm at the Buffalo Center for Art and Technologies. And she was talking about this exhibition for Leroy, you know, explained it to me and said that she really wanted to have some community-based and youth-based stuff. So me and her kind of fashioned out what those things were. And then I kind of developed it where we would develop a digital publication that would surround it, involved into just, you know, work being related to the Leroy stuff and then kind of interacting with Leroy and his end of the community outreach. And then involved to it being directly involved and hung with the exhibition. So it got more and more inclusive and more, it got less and less macaroni necklace and more like give these people space, you know, and really kind of like focus on community because, I mean, these kids are the culture. Like, you know, I don't know how old you are, but I know how old I am. And we're not the cultural producers anymore. Like we're living in their time. Like all of our time is that we identify with culturally and enrich ourselves with and become attached to aesthetically happens at their age. So really, you know, giving their space to recognize them as cultural producers, that was a big part of what we wanted to do. And then as we started to do those and talk about those things, then I was like, well, then we got to pull in just Buffalo because they got, you know, some great writers. And then we got to pull in Squeaky Wheel Film and Media Arts Center, you know, because they run great youth programs too. And we're all kind of siloed. So it'd be nice to see us kind of like come force and show everything together.
For the record, I'm 17 years old.
Well, you're doing good. This is your time then.
This is your time.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you.
Do well with it. Don't listen to adults.
Thank you. No, I'm just teasing. I was hoping to make you laugh and it failed miserably.
Oh, no, I teach teenagers. So.
Yeah, no, I teach college age students. So I hear you. What inspired you when you first saw the exhibit, and how did you bring this to the classroom?
Well, it was a little bit left of what would normally be done. So, I mean, initially, Tiffany just shared like a whole cache of images they were using internally, kind of started thinking about the exhibition and how it worked on their end, you know, Leroy. And I'm very big on the kids owning the space as much as possible. So we had a couple conversations as like a group. My students really focused on what they wanted to do. And it can go all over the place, so they don't really get asked very often to do this stuff. So what came down to is like, they didn't want to make work that they make in school, which is often they're presented with an artist, and then they make mimicked based work to kind of explore like whatever style or cultural contribution that that artist did as a way of kind of understanding, I don't even know what, I'm not even sure of the purpose of that method. But so we really kind of looked at it as they were going to take Leroy and take his work, and they were going to kind of consume it, and they were going to digest it, and then they were going to come up with their own versions of stuff. So essentially, we did a bunch of kind of collaborative, interrelated projects with each other first to develop some skills, gain some kind of like options or digital pathways for like making output. Basically, we just, in those early ones, we just used his work. Like the first thing we did was like they printed out 5 or 6 of his paintings they liked, and then they chopped them up and recollage them, recombine them, just to start demystifying and giving them space as much as possible. And then that kind of evolved where after we did a couple of those types of experiments where they did some, you know, evolutionary practices along the lines of animating those collages and all that other stuff, it was up to them to come up with an idea. And they just had to have one kind of connection to Leroy's work. So it could just be like the colors they use. It could be the physical work that Leroy makes recombined, you know what I mean? But they had to really figure out, like, their task was to evolve it in some way where they could still own it, you know what I mean? But there could be some type of tangential connection to Leroy and the work that they did. And we did that after we had like an in-classroom visit from Leroy, where he's a good couple hours with us and talked about his practice. And then we did a collaborative drawing. That was the only interaction, because my big thing was that like I wanted them to own it as much as possible. And to do that, I was like, well, you know, artists, they should make together. There's going to be any kind of equity in that. And then after that, it was they take all that experience, information, and then they're left to figure it out.
What have the student responses been, and what do you hope that students or even people listening to this interview take from this work?
That's a very good question. And what do I think that we'll start with the students. Number one is that the students feel that they did something that was relevant and edifying for them. Goal number one, no matter what it is we're doing, they are the focus. So, you know, the support from Birchfield and Leroy's support and openness, and the same with like Tiffany's cultivation and trust she had in how we would do things, you know, it's really about them. That's my charge. It's a mixed bag. They wanted to have freedom to like not like to work, you know what I mean? They wanted to have freedom to follow what it is that they like to do, you know, and I just acted as a barrier for them to kind of stray too far when it came to like not kind of addressing and solving the problem, which is the core part of like their educational practice and what I think is the most important part of them being there and learning. They learned how to address something. Like a couple kids that are just like, I don't like this work. Well, that's great. You don't have to like this work. I never asked you to like this work. I asked you to find something in this work, because that's the ultimate point. Like, you have to teach them how to find stuff. And they went through different evolutions of not liking it to like liking it. You know what I mean? To finding, like, dialing in those things. So that process of pushing out your initial biases and pulling in your ability to craft something so that you do love it and that you do find some kind of unsquashable, like, relationship to is really important. And a lot of them seem to have that. And as far as, like, people go, I just, you know, I don't know. I can't guess what people are going to do. They're not my charge. But, you know, the fact that they're hung there, that they're hung amongst the work, that they were treated so adequately and equitably by Tiffany is a curatorial process. You know, I hope it makes people understand that, like, it's that macaroni necklace thing. I hope they understand that there's no reason people can't be active cultural producers, you know, when they're in high school. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know, it just seems awfully weird that you magically transition from the age of 18 early to the age of 18 later, from non-relevance to relevance, you know, within a matter of enrollment of school or something like that. And so I want people to see work and see youth have a place at the table. Cause there's, I mean, you know, Buffalo's not known for its great access to the arts, even though there's a lot of arts and they're very segregated, just like the city is itself. You know, the arts themselves are segregated. And it's, you know, I myself am the person who shouldn't be standing in front of the classroom half the time, but that's the makeup of the art world and the education world. And I'm just hoping to make myself as irrelevant as possible eventually. And that these folks I get to work with, people like Tiffany, who are really looking for community and building out a lot of kind of like access in that way, allow the relevance of the city itself to matter. You see this with grants all the time. Like the National Endowment for Arts won't care if you use local artists. They want you to bring in people from the outside just because they consider that to be more relevant than the people who are here in this community. As a place like Buffalo Center for Art Technology serves free after-school, you know, arts and technology programs. And as most of it's for kids who don't have any access to this stuff in school in their lives, and would never have it in the pathway that they're in. And that we have a gallery space and we're on Main Street. It's hyper important that we kind of consider all of these things and that we need to leave this a lot more space a lot sooner to shift and realign focus with our priorities as a city. So we got a lot of art, we got a lot of talented folk. I know a lot of people say that, but I'm a transplant to Buffalo area and I stayed here because there was a genuine creative culture as opposed to a lot of other places that I've lived and stuff like that. There's like a definitive, no illusions version of arts and culture here.
Well, thank you very much for your time. Before we go, I always like to just ask the subjects that I'm interviewing, is there anything that you feel like we've missed or anything that you would like to share before we go?
Tiffany and the team over there just really brought a beautiful show, brought a really big community moment, and really made something special that didn't macaroni necklace anybody who was involved in the process.
Kevin, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. It was great talking to you. Thank you very much.
You too. Take care and good luck.
Finally, let's speak to Jay Hawkins, aka Cassius Green, a teaching artist for Buffalo Public Schools.
So to start off, could you tell us a little bit about your artistic practice?
Well, it ranges. It ranges from abstract work to, you know, more portraiture work. I've been drawing, you know, all my life, and really got into painting within the past maybe 7 to 8 years, and really still exploring that medium, creating and consolidating what a real style is, a recognizable art style. I feel like I'm becoming closer to that, blending some of my abstract work, some of my portrait work, and even my newfound more, you know, line work and symbology work, African symbology, heritage. It's always been deeply rooted in heritage. And I think I'm just, you know, digging a little deeper now as I grow and evolve and putting that in my artwork.
What are some of your influences and inspiration?
Inspiration early on came from, you know, really like my environment. The things we take in from childhood, you know, a lot of the music we listen to. So, you know, hip hop culture had a big impact on my earlier work as a kid and just perfecting and honing my craft. And I still draw inspiration from that, but even drawing inspiration from so many other places now, being a actual, you know, visual artist now, you know, you got to really draw inspiration from not just, you know, the things around you, but just the mundane things in life as well, too. You know, just seeing something that inspires you, capturing that and moving on that, you know, while you move to do it. So those are, you know, inspirations outside of people, just the things we take in.
What's your connection to the Birchfield Penny and the Leroy exhibit?
Leroy and me and the Birchfield Penny and so many other great collaborators, the Culturally Linguistic Program, we all came together to create something beautiful for these students, for the Buffalo BPS students that I personally work with. But the event was so big, you know, they work with three other schools as well, or educational-based programs to contribute to the Roy in Living Color show. I had the pleasure to be the lead instructor for the BPS students, though, that contributed their creative work, creative ideas, and, you know, hard work contribute to the beauty and wonder of Leroy's already amazing show, his body of work. To be a part of that was amazing.
How would you describe what the students created?
What the students created was, ironically, I had a mouthful, but that is what I would refer to it as, because they made some really amazing work. Leroy encouraged them to not really have any limits on their thought and on their ideas. And I think they really took that into consideration. And when they had these ideas, you know, these ideas all free of really, I believe, doubt, without knowing or overthinking what you can or can't do, they just said, this is what we're going to try. And Leroy gave them that encouragement to say, yeah, we can do that. I think he took it down to a practical level. He seen whatever vision they had and said, all right, well, we can do this and we can make this out of that. And we'll switch this up just a little bit, but it still kept their integral design. He just encouraged them. And that was great to see. Some of these ideas were pretty crazy. If you can see some of the artwork, some of the sculptures and figures that were created, you know, these were some big ideas. And, you know, of course, one would wonder, you know, how are we going to pull this off? And I think everybody may have questioned that at some point, maybe except for LeRoy. And I think that spirit just kind of went through everybody, even on the days that he wasn't there for his actual instruction. That spirit stayed throughout the whole program and throughout the weeks going on. And we were able to accomplish things with the resources we had available to us.
What inspired you when you saw the LeRoy exhibit?
What's inspiring is to definitely see the kids, the students at such a great show. But as far as his body of work, it was amazing to see all those years of your craft and of doing the work and on such a high level, you know, to really have a collection of art. You know, the show is what got selected. You know, there is more artwork within, so much more artwork within his catalog. As an aspiring artist, you know, to get to those sort of accomplishments, it's great. It's amazing. And just, you know, to see that body of work and to see the connections throughout the years, too. You know, to see how the artwork connects with itself, to see elements from a period decades ago incorporated into your work now and worked prior. It shows, you know, just the beauty of what you can create by doing the work, doing the art. So it's definitely inspirational to see and glad to be a part of it.
Did anything sort of inspire you specifically, like your practice or your art?
Oh, yeah, you definitely get ideas. Sometimes you get even confirmations on ideas you had already. I like to call them confirmations to our affirmations. We see something that, you know, we feel like we can do or we feel like that we can accomplish. And we see somebody do something similar in their craft. And it kind of lets us know, it confirms to us what we affirmed to ourselves once ago. Like, oh, yeah, I can do this. And people are doing this. And I can do this my way. That's always, you know, the way you got to kind of look at it. How do I take this and do this my way? So I think there's a lot of inspiration to see how things are done and do it in your own way. And then it's also good to take that inspiration to see something absolutely new and just be inspired in all of that. So it's always good to see artwork. As an artist, as anybody, you know, it's good to see art. It opens up your mind if you can give it the time and give it the open mind. You know, it'll strike a conversation. It may even give you some insight with this simple imagery. That's why I really like the abstract work, because it's less determined in what you see and it's more so allowing you to see whatever you might see. So I really like the abstract work.
Final question, how can seeing others' artistic work inspire us? Or like, what do you hope the students were inspired by and can take with them to the next sort of step of their life?
Learning about art lets you know like how kind of structured it is, you know, how getting just that insight into that world. There may be a lot of assumptions about the art world or artwork period, a lot of stereotypes. So it's good to just be a part of it and to come out of that with possibilities, knowing that things are possible, that you can have crazy ideas and that you can have a teamwork element and you can see things go from idea to concept to design to the work to bring that to life and actually have a final product that you can be proud of, that you can say, because that end product represents so many things. It represents teamwork. It represents ideas. It represents working at something, knowing that you have to change, you have to alter, you have to roll with the punches in a sense. You know, you had to figure some stuff out. Everything didn't go as planned and you had to figure that out. And the fact that this structure is standing lets you know that you endured and you can take that with you through life. I often teach that art lessons are life lessons. Whenever I'm teaching a class, whether it's my kindergartners or whether it's high schoolers, if it's a principle or something related to art, but I feel like that is also synonymous with life, I tell them, you can relate that to life too, because many of the lessons we learn in art relate directly to life. This is something amazing we're doing, is taking our conscious thought and putting it into active practice. You know, whatever art form you use, and the reason it's so attractive and so beautiful and so awe-attracting, because we're really doing divine work. And when those correlations come through in life, I always want to make those apparent.
Thank you. I felt that very deeply. I also teach. So I was like, that's just before we go, is there anything else you feel was left unsaid in this interview or anything you'd like to share about your experience as a teaching artist?
I guess just as an artist, that's maybe more so even speaking to artists, and even, you know, often we're speaking to ourselves, but just to explore your craft, you know, like we said throughout this interview, you know, be around other artists and do the work. I think all this culmination, seeing Leroy's exhibit, being a part of it, and you know, just really seeing decades of successful work being shown in so many different places at so many high levels and award-winning first, you know, place in art. It just lets you know, like, really to do the work and whatever your craft takes you, allow that journey to unfold. You know, I didn't think I would be necessarily a teaching artist. You know, that wasn't necessarily the path I thought. I just knew I wanted to really get back into art, you know, along really starting that painting journey, because I was drawing and, you know, it took a while when I wasn't doing. If you know you crafted to do something, you know, you should do that and take the responsibility that comes with it. You're going to have responsibility and some heartache with anything that you choose in life. So if you're meant to do something, you might as well take that responsibility rather than the heartache and something else and add extra heartache to be something that you don't want to do. So it's just do the work. Let that path unfold, because it'll take you to right where you need to be and endure through it, because, you know, it's not always going to look pretty. It's going to look like sometimes you're staying stagnant. It's going to look like sometimes other people are passing you by and you're doing the work but not seeing the results. It gets greater later. All the corny stuff that you hear is true if you can endure and stay down and do the work.
Thank you very much. It was really a pleasure speaking with you this morning. Thank you for your time, and thank you for being so generous with your answers.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you for having the time for me. I appreciate it.
Well, that is our show for today. I enjoyed speaking to Leroy and all of the teaching artists. If you haven't visited the Birchfield Penny, please do so. There is always something unique happening there. Today's show is produced by Jessica Marinelli. Addison Schoonmacher engineered the episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local events guides posted on buffalorising.com. We'll be back soon with more episodes, where we will explore our local creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studio.